Christ Your Life, an Easter sermon preached by Pastor Todd Wilkin.
Even though we die, we live. When a Christian breathes his last, no one dies. No one can die. For Christ has already died in the Christian's place.
And we'll send you a CD of this sermon and an Ascension sermon for any size gift before Easter Sunday. Make a secure online donation today. IssueZTC.org. Thanks for your support during the season of Lent.
Our thoughts and our prayers are with the people of Japan. This is a potentially catastrophic disaster.
Al-Qaeda is actively targeting the American Muslim community for recruitment. Today's hearing will address this dangerous trend.
It's true that specific individuals, including some who are Muslims, are violent extremists. However, these are individuals, not entire communities.
God does not need anything from us. And when we worship, we're receiving things from Him. God is the giver, and we are on the receiving end of His gifts. That's what it means to be a Christian.
Kansas Lutheran truck drivers are no strangers to multitasking. We can both listen to issues, etc., and pronounce it correctly at the same time.
Is this how it happened? We're told that this is how it happened. But is this how it happened? Somewhere in the late 1950s, all these women in heels and dresses who had been housewives suddenly realized that there was this vast sisterhood out there. Burgeoning feminism joined the movement, left the home, went to work in the name of the sisterhood. That is one of the stories that feminism tells. It is largely accepted without question. But is that how it happened? Just that simple fact that women went to work, is that to the credit of feminism? And is it necessarily a good thing that so many women left the home, whether they did it for feminism or not? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. this Friday afternoon, March the 18th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Joining us for the next hour to talk about feminism, fact and fiction, Suzanne Venker. She's a married mother of two children in St. Louis, author of the blog No Bull Mom, and co-author of the new book, The Flip Side of Feminism, What Conservative Women Know and Men Can't Say. Suzanne, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Suzanne, did you once buy into the myth and the promise of feminism yourself?
You know, I never did. However, I will say that I had a little bit of a leg up in that regard. I was definitely unusual for my generation. I'm 43 today, actually.
Happy birthday.
And, thank you. And my generation, I was definitely one of the only women I knew who thought differently about this issue. And I credit that to having been the niece of Phyllis Schlafly, who I did co-author this book with. And she's sort of the preeminent anti-feminist of the 20th century. And so while I didn't always know how I felt about it, and I didn't jump on board right away with Phyllis's cause because I really didn't understand it when I was younger, I certainly was exposed to an alternative view that my contemporaries were not. And I think, you know, I liken it to being exposed to Fox News or the internet or talk radio when you're bombarded with mainstream media. It's just something that I had available to me. And because of that, I was able to think very deeply about these things early on, and I ultimately came to my own conclusion, and it just happened to side with her position on it.
What was the nature of that exposure to the alternative view in the face of just this tidal wave of feminist thought?
Well, her biggest thing that she was credited for was really helping to defeat, or almost single-handedly defeating, the Equal Rights Amendment. Now, when that was going on in the 1970s, and we give about 5 pages to this issue in The Flip Side of Feminism so that people can see her connection there. And it's an incredible story. It really is. It shows how the grassroots can really rise up and make some headway over the big guys. And that's ultimately what her story tells. But she fought the Equal Rights Amendment right when feminism was in its heyday. So when Betty Friedan was doing her thing to kind of get women to think about their lives in a completely different way, meaning marriage and motherhood is for the birds, and we need to go out and seek our fulfillment elsewhere. And one of their causes, or their initial cause, was the Equal Rights Amendment. Phyllis came along to show them why the Equal Rights Amendment was not necessary and what it would and wouldn't do for women. And she took, obviously, tremendous flack for that. Brady Friedan told her she'd like to burn her at the stake, as a matter of fact, during one interview. So she sort of paved the way for showing that you can take an alternative view, and if you show your research and your common sense, you can prevail.
Many today look at the track record and the results of 30 to 40 years of feminism and realize that feminism has failed in so many respects. But you say, even though feminism has failed in those respects, we would be badly mistaken to conclude that feminism is dead. Why?
Yes. Because many people, if you ask them today, and I'd say anyone really under 50, in particular, anyone in their 20s, 30s, and 40s, if you ask them about feminism, a lot of them will say, A, that they don't want to be called a feminist, but they don't really know why, or B, they think that was just some movement that took place a long time ago. But the reality is feminists and feminism did not disappear just because those women are no longer marching in the streets. What that movement did was become incorporated into the Democratic Party, and the Democratic Party was happy to have them because ultimately their agenda is as left-wing as, you know, they have a commonality there. They just think alike. And it morphed into society via the Democratic Party. So it is dramatically affecting people today in ways they don't even realize, the biggest of which is that the feminist, who we call the feminist elite, is the group of women that Americans are exposed to the most. So the feminist elite can be found in academia, which is a hugely left-wing, by far left-wing group, then Hollywood, and then the media. And when you take those three arenas, all put them together, that's an extreme amount of power. And so regular Americans are constantly exposed to this one view of the world and of women and their place in it, so that everyday American women who are largely a right-of-center group are getting values that sort of conflict with their own, and that's where the chasm is, and that's a problem.
Betty Friedan, author of Feminist Mystique, obviously the Bible, if you will, of radical feminism, likes to reflect upon the movement, and many of her ilk do as well. It's almost accepted without question that in the 1950s, all these women in heels and skirts at home, keeping house, taking care of kids and husband, suddenly realized that they could be part of this giant sisterhood. And in the name of feminism, they left home for work. Can feminism take credit for that?
That never happened. And that's something that is hard on the ears, because that's nothing, no one's ever heard otherwise. But the reality is that's not what happened. The things that made women able to turn their attentions outside of the home life have to do with several things. One, the main thing, of course, is technology. Technology is what freed women up to do other things. You go back to the 40s, you're talking about the washing machine and dishwasher, which those are things, specifically the washing machine. Before the washing machine, women had no choice but to spend most of their time washing clothes. It was a terrible job. So having that machine, which seems nothing to us because we've always had it, all of a sudden there were hours freed in the day that they were doing something before and now they're not. That allows you to turn your attention elsewhere. And each decade, you can point to something else. And then in 1960, we had the birth control pill, which, of course, was a huge factor because people could then choose to have larger families if that's what they wanted, and that obviously allows you to have more time to do other things if you have two children versus six. And then, of course, as technology progressed, we now have the internet, and we have women who have home-based work, and that allows them these multifaceted lives that in the past simply weren't available. Now, these things would have occurred whether or not feminists took to the streets or not. They want to take credit for having changed the world. They did not change, well, they did change the world, but not for the better. So we need to point the fingers in the right direction as to where the blame lies and where the credit can be where the credit is due.
So in other words, this myth of the sisterhood really is one of the primary lies that feminism continues to tell about itself.
It is, in the sense that it's not that it's not real and it doesn't exist. There is a sisterhood, but it's a minority. The problem is, again, the women that we're talking about are the only women you see. When you turn on your television, you go to the movies, you go to college, you go to work, you're exposed to these women dominantly. Because obviously people ask, well, where were the conservative women? Where are they? Well, where do you think they are? They're sort of busy, focused on their families. Now, that doesn't mean they do not have jobs as well. Many do. But the difference is the focus of their lives continues to be the family. And marriage and motherhood is their primary sort of source of happiness and fulfillment. And the other things that they do in life sort of revolves around that, rather than the other way around, which is the feminist agenda that work should be your ultimate source of fulfillment. And, you know, if we have some men and children there along the way, that's great.
Suzanne Venker is our guest. We're talking with her on this Friday afternoon, March the 18th, about feminism, fact, and fiction. Suzanne is a married mother of two children in St. Louis, author of the blog No Bull Mom, and co-author of the new book, The Flip Side of Feminism, What Conservative Women Know and Men Can't Say. When we come back, we'll talk a bit about the sexual revolution. But before that, she mentioned the pill. We also have to talk about abortion on demand, something you cannot tell the story of feminism in America without abortion on demand. You cannot understand feminism today without understanding the central, and it is central, place of abortion in the mind of the feminist. It's Friday afternoon, March the 18th. Suzanne Venker is our guest. We'll also talk a little bit about what the sexual revolution in the name of feminism has brought us today, and can we ever go back? We'll be right back.
This way, and it was signed by the Secretary Harper Valley PTA.
Here are two new ways to stay connected to issues, etc. Facebook and Twitter. You'll find photos of in-studio guests at facebook.com/issuesetc, and you'll find a list of upcoming topics and guests on Twitter at issuesetc. Social networking for the thinking Christian, facebook.com/issuesetc, and on Twitter at issuesetc. Connect with fellow Issues Etc. junkies today, facebook.com/issuesetc, and on Twitter at issuesetc.
Would you like to share something you've heard on Issues Etc. via email, Facebook, Twitter, or text message? We've made it easy for you. Just go to the Listen On Demand page of our website, issuesetc.org, and click Share This. You'll find almost 50 ways to share Issues Etc. audio. We love our on-demand listeners. Old Theology, New Technology, issuesetc.org. Go to the Listen On Demand page and click Share This.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Have you heard of the CLCC? In Hosea 4, we see, "My people are destroyed by lack of knowledge." The Confessional Lutherans for Christ's Commission can help educate Lutherans on being Lutheran. We treasure our Lutheran beliefs and think that all Lutherans would if they learn what we believe, teach, and confess. So visit our website, www.theclcc.org. Check out what we have to offer. Get on our mailing list, or better yet, join us. And maybe encourage your pastor to hold a seminar in your area. Just go to theclcc.org.
Thanks for sending us your email. Having produced Issues Etc. for more than 15 years, I can tell you that we've never received email response like this. Unfortunately, we simply can't reply to all of your email. So here's a way that I can almost guarantee a response to your question or comment. Call the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8384. It's available for your questions or comments 24/7, 618-223-8384.
Welcome back. We're talking about feminism, fact, and fiction. Suzanne Venker is our guest on this Friday afternoon. She's author of the new book, The Flip Side of Feminism, What Conservative Women Know and Men Can't Say. Suzanne, let's talk. It's a complex of issues, including the pill you mentioned before, abortion on demand, no-fault divorce, and now more recently the urge toward a hookup culture. But let's start with what you list in one of your appendixes for the book as the second commandment of feminism: thou shalt be allowed to have an abortion at any time for any reason. How important is abortion to feminism?
Well, it's absolutely central to their whole agenda. Actually, abortion and daycare, I almost talk about them together. And the reason that I do is because those two things, abortion, daycare, ultimately remove the biggest stumbling block that is in their way, in the feminist's way, and that is, of course, babies. If you remove babies from the equation, you ultimately end up with true equality in the way they see it and wish it to be, because ultimately their goal is for both men and women to be totally interchangeable. Everything is done 50-50. Life is pursued, whether it's sex, education, work, parenting, all of it is pursued in exactly the same fashion, and you can cross over each other's roles with no problem. That's ultimately their goal. And of course, it doesn't take into account not only human nature and common sense, but the fact that men and women obviously are very different. They are equal but different, and that is what is lost in that debate. And only by recognizing those differences can we really become happy. And I think trying to force ourselves to be something we're not is what's caused the biggest problem.
So while feminism has been viewed as hostile toward men primarily, it sounds like you are saying really feminism's primary hostility is directed at children.
Yes, I would say that that's a fair assessment. Now, of course, men have taken the brunt of the feminist movement. But again, if you really had to put those two on the same, you know, if you had to put them in order, yes, I would say babies or children are the number one stumbling block. Men, they can sort of deal with if they can just sort of get them to do what they want to do. But with babies and children, you know, you don't have much control. They need what they need, and they have they now enter the world the same exact way that they did 100 years ago. And that's, now that's an interesting concept, because, of course, that's something that can't change. And the whole purpose of feminism is, in the name of progress, and of course it's not progress, but to them it is to change society, to change gender, to change policy, just simply the most left-wing view of the world you could possibly have. But children mess up that plan because they don't change.
You, in the middle of your book, you talk about author Elizabeth Gilbert, Eat, Pray, Love fame, and not only the book, but also the movie starring Julia Roberts that was made from it, almost strikes me as the feminist Cinderella story. How is Elizabeth Gilbert and her book, her movie, and her views emblematic of the dreams of the feminist?
You know, the reason why I focused so much on her and that book is because it's just, as you say, it's so emblematic of where we are. I mean, this book would not have done well 40 years ago, let's face it. You have a woman here who went through a painful divorce. She did not have children, and divorced her husband and went on her year-long romp around the globe to, quote-unquote, find herself. Now, this is there's nothing inherently wrong with trying to find oneself. Hopefully we do that before we settle down. But that is the feminist dream, that ultimately, rather than looking at life as a matter of a family unit and men, women, and children sort of together as one unit, women are sort of plucked out of that scene and viewed as superior, really, in some ways, and have special needs because they need to get in touch with themselves and find themselves. And anything that smacks of that is celebrated in the media and certainly in Hollywood. So whether or not men and children get lost in the process doesn't matter, because ultimately the goal is women, 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 women. Now, that particular show, or excuse me, movie, I didn't actually see the movie, but the book, was a fantastic read, and I gave her credit for that. She's a great writer. And it really wasn't Eat, Pray, Love as much that I took issue with as the second book. Now, in the second book, which is called Committed, and I think it's out now in paperback, Elizabeth Gilbert it's not a memoir like her first book. She takes this opportunity in her second book to completely trash conservatism and the traditional family model and just marriage in general. And so in that piece, it was another opportunity for the feminist worldview to get its message out in a very loud way, because of course people already knew who she was from the first book. So in this book, she basically says that marriage is outdated and it was a patriarchal institution and so on and so forth, and she does it subtly. So that was my example of how feminism is very much alive today, and it's happening without you realizing it, because many people will read that and not really understand that there's an agenda there behind it all.
What strikes me about that is that the original feminists were promising that women could have it all. They could have marriage and husband and children and work, have it all, and without any tension or complications, more or less, as long as they followed the feminist game plan. But it seems as though of late, feminism is not saying you can have it all, basically saying you shouldn't have marriage. Marriage is going to get in your way, too. That's not part of the all we want you to have anymore.
That's right. That's exactly right. And, of course, that conflicts with what the average American woman wants. I mean, most women know instinctively that you can't really get your ultimate satisfaction and fulfillment and happiness from the workforce. I mean, even men know that your job is a job and that it serves a function, specifically for men, to care for this more important thing in your life, which, of course, is your family. But the feminist movement has broken that down to such a degree. So the concept of having it all is solely about what one can supposedly gain outside the home, and at the expense, of course, of where your real fulfillment is supposed to come from, which is marriage and children.
You mentioned before daycare. I want a little more detail on that. What do we need to know about daycare that feminism isn't telling us?
The biggest issue with daycare, and there's a handful, but the biggest one is that in the early years of a child's life, the most important factor is their emotional development. Now, that is something that is never covered in the media. They probably don't even know about it. They've never done the research there. But they also have never been home with their kids long enough to even experience it on a firsthand basis. But the emotional development in babies and toddlers is what ultimately allows human beings to develop compassion, empathy, trust, and those intangibles that is what makes us human. And by dismissing that, there you have a nation of children who are just skipping over that process. When you go to daycare, you're never going to have the consistent love and attention from one person. And that is the biggest problem with daycare, is that you have high turnover. You can't replace the singular parent. And even if that ends up being the father at home, fine. But the most important piece is that one-on-one, and that simply cannot happen in a daycare situation. Now, that's not something that the media is going to tell you, of course, because it's very politically correct, and you're supposed to say that, you know, whatever the mom wants to do is fine, and daycare is there for your benefit so you can go do something else.
You can get a tax break for daycare.
Yes, that too. That's right. That too.
And it seems to me that, in that sense at least, the government has institutionalized in the tax code part of the feminist agenda.
Well, President Obama thinks this is the Barrys, of course, because he loves the feminists. You know, they're all on the same page. And he, as I'm sure you know, is a pusher of early childhood education, which is a euphemism for daycare. He pushes the notion that the earlier you put children, or babies, or toddlers, or whatever, into schools, the smarter they will be. Well, this is completely bogus. The intellectual development of children that age doesn't even matter. It doesn't even come into play until they're about five, which is why kindergarten always started about there. But he spreads the feminist notion that the quicker the babies get out into the real world, the smarter they will be. But in fact, it's just about pushing the feminist agenda of getting mothers out of the home.
If you've ever walked into the average daycare center, it's not about, it really isn't, even in the best, about education. I mean, it's more
about...
No, not
at all. Well, you're right. That's the other side of it. Not only is the message bogus, But the actual way that it plays out isn't anything like that. That's not what daycare is there for. I mean, the people there are not teaching them ABCs. They're just trying to keep everybody happy and not keep each other from killing each other. That's basically what it looks like. It's a horrible existence.
You have a great, and I think just a tremendous summary of the daycare issue in one of the headings, subheadings of your chapter, where it says, daycare is for parents, not for children. What do you mean by that with 1 minute?
Daycare has become today for parents to be able to essentially have children and go about their lives as they knew it before. If you can remove them and have somebody else care for them, you can continue forth with your life. Those of us who have stayed home, and certainly in the past when most women did, know full well that when children come into your life, it changes your life completely, and you have to make those accommodations. Daycare allows parents to not make those accommodations, essentially.
Suzanne Venker is our guest. We're talking about feminism, fact, and fiction. It's Friday afternoon, March the 18th. More with her after this.
We'll pick up so much yardage. Mini skirts, hot pants, and a few little fancy frills. Yeah, I'm making up for all those years since I've got the pill.
You'll find study notes highlighting the promises of God and Jesus' death for you in the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for March, the Faith Alive Student Bible. This full-color Bible for students ages 8 through high school is edited by Issues Etc. regular guest, Dr. Carl Fikencher. You can browse before you buy at issuesetc.org, or you can purchase the Faith Alive Study Bible by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040.
Did you know that you can listen to Issues Etc. 24/7? Check out our website, issuesetc.org, and go to the Listen On Demand page. Listen at the gym, in your kitchen, in your garden, on your iPod, your computer, or in your car. The technology may be new, but the truth never changes. Issues Etc. on-demand audio available for your convenience at issuesetc.org. 10 hours of new programming each week. issuesetc.org and click Listen On Demand.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
And now for the election results.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
When it comes to the 2010 midterm elections, much attention has been given to the Republican capture of the U.S. House and its Senate gains. However, another important consequence of that election is that Republicans won control of 19 state legislatures previously held by Democrats. The Republican Party now fully controls at least half of the legislatures in the country, the highest total for the party since 1928. Republican leaders in many of those states have pledged to champion pro-life measures. Tune in next time to hear what leaders in one state have planned.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. For more about our work to mobilize and advance pro-life women in politics, visit our website at sba-list.org.
Welcome back. We're talking about feminism, fact, and fiction. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Suzanne Venker is our guest. She's a married mother of two in St. Louis, author of the blog No Bull Mom, and co-author of the new book, The Flip Side of Feminism, What Conservative Women Know and Men Can't Say. You can find out more about The Flip Side of Feminism at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Suzanne, let's talk about the plight of men now. They are routinely, to come back to the theme that you've been sounding here in our conversation, in the media, especially in pop culture media, they are routinely presented as the weakest link in the family. Dad, husband, pretty much kind of the lovable oaf. But mom would certainly do better if he just kind of... You know, brought home the paycheck that he can contribute perhaps 49% of the household income and then just kept his mouth shut. Your thoughts?
Yeah, that has been, there's just simply no questioning the fact that men have been demoted from respected members of society and important part of the family life to essentially buffoons. You know, I mean, you just turn on the television for any sitcom and you'll see the way that men are portrayed. And if you flip that around and ever had it the other way, I mean, there would be harassment cases, there would be abuse charges. I mean, you cannot, there's so many situations where you could flip it and it just could never happen because women rule the roost. So this whole notion that women are actually victims in society is so ridiculous. It's the complete opposite, if anything. Men are the ones who have taken the fallout of feminism, and it starts when they're very young in schools. And we sort of in our chapter there on men, we sort of take the male path from childhood through adulthood to show what's happening in each stage of their life, that's being how they're being affected by our feminist culture. For example, Title IX. Now, when they get to college, Title IX was really a spectacular social reform movement, if you will, by feminists, whereby it was supposed to just allow women more options in the world of sports. And it sounds so benign, like all of their terminology does, but the reality is they have made it so that colleges and even high schools, some of them, have to have 50-50 representation in their sports teams. Now, this is ridiculous because everybody knows that men are more interested in sports than women, and they're going to pursue that at a greater rate than women, and that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that, but not to feminists. You know, this goes back to the whole 50-50 across the board notion, and, of course, what does that mean? That means you have to get rid of some of those sports teams that men have traditionally wanted to go into so that they can't now have what they want because of this feminist agenda.
Again, has feminism taken this farther than maybe the original feminists may have wanted to go with it, farther than equality, that now men aren't simply regarded as equals but as expendable?
Well, quick answer, yes. But in a larger sense, you know, that's a great point about the original feminists, because one of the reasons that I wanted to write this book is that even the conservative movement of today is finding themselves sort of in a quandary. You know, you have Sarah Palin, who's basically representing, obviously, conservative women, but she also wants to claim the feminist banner, and so she calls herself a feminist. And what's happening there is that a lot of conservative women are trying to create a new feminism going forward. So they call themselves either conservative feminists or pro-life feminists or the new feminists or the real ones. And the truth of the matter is that what I understand what they're trying to do, they're trying to equate their mindset or their worldview with the suffragettes, which is of the early 20th century and 19th century. Now, the problem there is that movement has absolutely nothing to do with the real feminist movement in this country that began in the 1960s. The problem is people confuse those because the folks in charge, the powers that be, have divided up the feminist movement into three waves: first wave, second wave, and third wave. First wave being the suffragettes, second wave being the 1960s bra burners, and third waves being the ones that exist now. But the reality is they just tried to piggyback off of a legitimate movement, you know, getting the female vote in all 50 states, and pretended as though they were just carrying on or continuing forth with the women's rights movement. But the agenda of feminists has nothing to do with the agenda of the suffragette movements. The suffragettes were very pro-family women, and they were not in favor of abortion at all.
Taking Sarah Palin as an example, she is successful. She one might even argue that she is successful independent of her husband in any respect.
Mm-hmm.
She is the picture of what I think feminism thought it could achieve here. I mean, for heaven's sakes, she ran for vice president of the United mm-hmm. States. What's wrong with her, according to feminism?
What's wrong with her is that she's conservative, and she's pretty, and she does have it all. And the issue there is that they're trying to push a completely opposite notion, which is that, A, to be a real feminist, you have to be pro-choice, number one. Number two, true feminists are so far to the left, they're actually socialists, which, of course, Sarah Palin is not. And so there's nothing that they can get behind. There's no agenda of hers that they could get behind. So therefore, it actually, in a funny way, sort of proves the fraudulent nature of their own movement, because they claim that it's all about what Sarah Palin represents, but clearly since they're not behind her, it just shows that their agenda isn't anything like what they say that it is.
Is she the Clarence Thomas, so to speak, of feminism? That is, Clarence Thomas, Supreme Court Justice, said, at least in his hearings, did not give a lot of credit to the NAACP and other civil rights groups. And you know, he kind of became Supreme Court Justice on the merits of work.
And you know what? So did Sarah Palin, and I'd like to see her say that. Unfortunately, she has aligned herself with the feminist movement. And that's unfortunate, because the reality is she did not get where she is because of feminists. She may think that, but then she has absorbed all this, all these myths and assumptions. You know, she's only a year or two older than I am, so she's grown up with that same environment where women are taught that we owe what we have today to our feminist sisters. Now, if she's referring to the suffragettes, that's one thing, but there's no distinction made there, and it's very confusing to people, and that's why we made the subtitle "What Conservative Women Know," because we're trying to show that this is really, it really is a matter of politics, even if we don't want it to be.
So I take it that at this point in time, you don't think that the term feminist can be rehabilitated.
Correct. Exactly. I do not, and nor do I think that about the word liberal, which I would love to take back, because conservatives are the true liberals in the world.
So, I mean, even though it would sound incredibly anachronistic, you think Sarah Palin ought to be calling herself a suffragette?
Yeah, if I had my druthers, I would have her use the correct terminology so as not to confuse people, yes.
Okay, let's talk about the alternative for women. You devote a big part of the latter part of your book to this. Where does it begin?
It begins with taking a completely different view of women and their quote-unquote place in society. And rather than coming from the perspective that they are second-class citizens or victims of the patriarchy, which is the ultimate feminist message that we've been living with for 30 years, to look at women as though you are the most, American women now, I'm sorry, I got to specify that, American women as the most fortunate women ever. I mean, we have such great lives, so many options, and those options came about not because of feminism, but because of natural progress that we've made via technology mainly in this country, the free market, capitalism, and technology is, quite frankly, what's made our lives so great. So you start with that premise, and then looking forward when you're trying to plan your life as a woman, we name three non-negotiables. The first is that casual sex is a dead-end street. Now, growing up today, young girls are not obviously getting that message, and of course, unless they're getting it from their parents, but I mean from the culture at large, the idea that women can and should sleep around willy-nilly, like men supposedly do, and suffer no consequences from that. That is one of the greatest lies that's ever been told, ever. And we spend an entire chapter on it because it's so important. So you assume that that's just not a bad road, any way you look at it. Number two is that marriage is the ultimate goal. Not that it's something that you might fit in if you can get to it, but that ultimately that's what's going to make you the happiest, and it's going to be the best environment for children if you choose to have children. And then the third non-negotiable is that you will stay home with your children at least when they are young and plan your life around that from the get-go so that that goal can be achieved, and it can be achieved. And the culture is not going to tell you that. They're going to tell you to put your career at the center and try to fit marriage and motherhood in around that, and that is the complete opposite way that we think you should do it.
Suzanne Venker is our guest. 10 more minutes with her on the other side of this break. It's Friday afternoon, March the 18th. We're talking about feminism, fact, and fiction. We'll explore those three non-negotiables that she just mentioned in the last 10 minutes of the program. She's a married mother of two children in St. Louis, author of the blog No Bull Mom, and co-author of the new book, The Flip Side of Feminism, What Conservative Women Know and Men Can't Say. So we'll take on in the next 10 minutes the hookup culture. It simply is an impossible way forward for women and for men. We'll talk about marriage as the ultimate goal. I know that that sounds very backward, but it actually is the best way forward for both women and men, and putting children at the center of our priorities for our entire life. We'll be right back.
Christ Your Life, an Easter sermon preached by Pastor Todd Wilkin.
Even though we die, we live. When a Christian breathes his last, no one dies. No one can die. For Christ has already died in the Christian's place.
And we'll send you a CD of this sermon and an Ascension sermon for any size gift before Easter Sunday. Make a secure online donation today. IssuesETC.org. Thanks for your support during the season of Lent.
Hello, this is Pastor Kevin Golden of Village Lutheran Church in Ladue, Missouri. The saints at Village Lutheran are proud to be part of the Issues Etc. 300, sharing in their Christ-centered, cross-focused proclamation of the gospel. If you find yourself in St. Louis, join us on Sundays at 8:15 and 10:45 for the Divine Service, 9:30 for Bible study and Sunday school, as we receive Christ's gifts of forgiveness, life, and salvation. Or visit us on the web at www.villagelutheranchurch.org.
Independent and in the black for 2 years and running, you're listening to Issues Etc.
We've got nothing against bumper stickers, just bumper sticker theology, and we'd like to send you an Issues Etc. bumper sticker. You'll find the Issues Etc. logo, slogan, and website address. Simply send your request to Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Please include a self-addressed stamped envelope. Good theology doesn't fit on a bumper sticker, but you can tell people where to find good theology, the Issues Etc. bumper or window sticker.
Well, I think that's a very good question.
Check out our new YouTube video, Good Question, IssuesETC.org, and click Support. Good questions, better answers, Issues Etc. Watch the short YouTube video, Good Question, today. Just go to the support page of our website, IssuesETC.org.
Well, you know, that's a good question.
That's a very good question.
Yeah, that's a good question.
No, that's a good question.
I am strong.
Welcome back. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. We're talking feminism, fact, and fiction with Suzanne Venker. She's co-author of the new book, The Flip Side of Feminism. When you purchase The Flip Side of Feminism using the Amazon.com link at our website, a percentage of your purchase will help support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. IssuesETC.org. Click Listen on Demand. Look for The Flip Side of Feminism. The three non-negotiables that you mentioned before, that casual sex and cohabitation are simply ruled out at the outset, that marriage is the ultimate goal, divorce should not be assumed to be an option, and that children must take a priority in our planning throughout our whole lives. It seems to me that that used to be taught to both women and men, or maybe we should say girls and boys, from the time they were very young. What happened?
Feminism. That's what happened. They were taught that. There's no question about it. But once we changed the rules there with feminism, they get a very different message. And the notion that the most powerful one from them, from the feminists, came with this notion of casual sex. That, you know, they essentially wanted everyone to point their fingers at boys and say, look, boys have this great life. We want to be just like them. They get to sleep around without any censure, and that's great because women are not free to do the same thing. Well, the reality is men, males and females, are different. And while the ultimate goal is for both men and women to be married and not sleep around for a lifestyle, before marriage, the reality is that women, when they try to adopt that mentality of sleeping around, are not only at great harm in terms of STDs and the more obvious one, pregnancy, but there's another thing that has gotten lost in the shuffle there, and that's their emotional reaction to this. Now, boys and girls, when it comes to sex, men and women, simply are different. And when it comes to sex, men, there was a study at Princeton that was done that we talk about in the book, and that found that 91% of girls, after they had engaged in what we call a hookup, experienced regret, and that twice as many girls than boys expect emotional involvement as a result of that hookup. Now, that's not something, again, you ever hear in the media or from the culture in general, because the idea is that girls can engage in that kind of behavior in the same way some males do without having that effect. But girls and boys do have a different response to that environment, to that choice of lifestyle, or however you want to put it, activity. And that's, feminists don't like that. They want it to be different, but it isn't. It can't be the way they want it to be.
How do we, even against what is almost insurmountable odds when it comes to the voice of the popular media, present marriage as a good? Because we are on the verge, if not over the verge, yeah, the media message being marriage is, yeah, if you want to do it, fine, but it's the downside is far greater than the upside.
Absolutely. You know, I was on an interview earlier, and I have to tell you, it was a woman, and she said, marriage just isn't realistic anymore. You know, and she named all the reasons why that today's world is different from 30 years ago, and because of these changes that she named, you know, maybe we can stick it out with someone for 10 years, but that's about the max. And I said to her, and she had just written a book that she said had taken her several years to do. I said, now, if you had taken that attitude about writing your book, do you think that book would have gotten written? I mean, it's all in your attitude. Listen to it. If you believe that something's not possible, chances are it ain't ever going to happen. In other words, the focus of our chapter on marriage and the flip side of feminism is that ultimately this is about an attitude change. It sounds very simplistic, but it really isn't. It's about ignoring the culture and accepting and believing that marriage is absolutely doable and attainable and a good thing. And if we really put in that effort and have that right attitude, and both people have to do that together, it's amazing how much more successful we will be. It's really that self-defeatist attitude. I mean, the common attitude today is marriage, and this, of course, comes from feminism yet again, is that marriage will stifle your creativity or ruin you in some way, or that it's the end. I used an example of Sandra Bullock, the actress who told Barbara Walters that she viewed marriage as being the end of who you are. Now, this is a very common mentality that my generation certainly has grown up with. I remember hearing it myself in my 20s from people. The idea was to push marriage off as far into the future as possible, because ultimately your life was going to end at that point. And I always took the opposite approach, that actually my life's going to really begin when I settle down, not end. And that has made all the difference in the world.
What I fear, Suzanne, is that with another couple passing decades, we're going to have a bifurcated culture. We're going to have a culture of people who have committed to marriage and family for their entire lives, who, even men or women, whether they work inside or outside the home, they are, that is the whole purpose of what they're doing all the time: marriage, spouse, family, children. And then on the other side of that chasm, the other side of the culture, people who have left it behind and simply don't even understand what it's there for anymore. Are we there already?
I do think we are. I absolutely do think we are. The amount of research and reading I have done on just the subject alone is profound, and that is exactly what I have seen, that there is this chasm. There's one way of looking at it, two ways of looking at it, and it's very much divided into what you just described. And people have to, the only way to do something about it is for people to write books and talk about it and try to change this whole process, because I agree with you, I do think we are headed down that road.
Finally then, has feminism delivered on its promise of happiness and self-fulfillment?
Well, the flip side of feminism was predicated on this whole study that was done in 2007 from the National Bureau of Economic Research, which showed that after 35 years, the lives of women have improved over the last 35 years, yet women's happiness has declined. And when that study came out, I remember the the bigwig, Time, Newsweek, all the rest, asked the question, did feminism make women miserable? And, of course, who do you think they consulted to answer that question? Themselves. So feminists would write articles in response to that, and, of course, they said, no, that's ridiculous and what have you. But, of course, the answer is yes, at least in our opinion, and that's the case that we make in The Flip Side of Feminism.
Can we go back?
We cannot go back, but we can look back. We can look back at what we did do right and keep in place or try to recapture those things that did work before we got off track and try to marry those things with modern-day life.
Suzanne Venker is a married mother of two in St. Louis. She's author of the blog No Bull Mom, and she's co-author of the new book, The Flip Side of Feminism, What Conservative Women Know and Men Can't Say. Suzanne, thank you for being our guest.
Thanks for having me.
Folks, if you've enjoyed listening to Issues Etc. this week, please consider making a tax-deductible donation this weekend. You can make a secure online contribution at issuesetc.org. You can also donate by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio and send it to LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. The address again, LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for listening, and as always, thanks for your continued support. I agree, I don't think we can go back. There are some thresholds that you cross, and once you've crossed them, the door closes behind you. Now, you might be able to peek under the door or through the keyhole to see what you left behind and try and bring that again into our modern life. We have crossed a threshold in our culture. I think we have to admit it with regard to marriage and family and children, but that doesn't mean we have to accept what our culture now accepts as their failed substitutes. You know, it may just begin with you and your kids, raising your daughter and your son to think about their future, their life, not in terms of career or success or financial gain, but in terms of what they already have right there in front of them, family. I mean, think about it. Does your boss may go to your funeral, but he's not the one standing at your deathbed when you're breathing your last. Your coworkers, your college professors, your employees, they may come to the funeral, but they're not going to be there when you're dying. Who will be there? Your wife, your husband, your children, your parents? To teach our children to think about themselves in terms of what they already have, a mother, a father, siblings, and in the future for them as mothers and fathers and spouses and parents of their own children. See, then they'll think about their future in terms of marriage and all the good that it brings in society, and family and all the good that it brings to not only society, but to each of us. I'm Todd Wilkin. Talk with you again Monday. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.